स्वरूपम रूपम तस्यागजम उर्पुरीं माथुरीं गोष्ठवतीं राधाकुण्डं गिरिवरमहो राधिका माधवाशं प्राप्तो यस्य प्रथित कृपया श्रीगुरुं तं नतोऽस्मि। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयतः पदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणरघुनाथन्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादान् सहगणललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च। Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Continuing the discussion of Sri Vishnu Sahasranama, and one name that I'm probably definitely this name that I'm speaking on presently, I'm speaking on more elaborately than any other name I've spoken on so far, and probably will be the most elaborate of all of them. If I get through, I still have another more than 500 to go, but I think this will be the most elaborate. Of course, all the names could be explained elaborately, but this particular name just opens up to every leela that we know of Krishna's, because the name is Naika Kamakrit, which means he doesn't do one work. There's one statement in Srila Prabhupada's one purport describing the leela of Lord Vamana with Bali Maharaj. Prabhupada says, in the Sanskrit, it's given the word bhuri karmana. Srila Prabhupada translates this as, he performs one work to serve many purposes. So there are many, many examples of this, and I've discussed some of them. Now I'll discuss some more. The worship of Govardhan Hill, the pastime of lifting Govardhan, one of the very famous pastimes of Krishna. There are many pastimes which are not so well known. If we talk about Krishna, just like we went through all these names of Krishna in the songs by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So some names that he's very merciful to Kubja is not so well known. He's merciful to Kubja, that he smashed the cart in which the demon was there. But some pastimes are very well known. Damodar Leela is very well known. Rasa Leela is very well known. Govardhan Leela, that is very well known. When we drive into Chennai, there's one village, just now it's become joined with the whole metropolitan conglomeration. That's called Govardhan. Maybe the people, they don't know what it means now, but the name is there. We should go there and tell them. This is named in remembrance of Krishna's lifting that hill. What an attraction that is, that so many people are coming, even now. So many people coming, for even in the hot season. I was there in Govardhan for some weeks in the hot season. It means in May. It's extremely hot. So in the daytime, no one does parikrama, hardly. Practically even the birds don't move. The monkeys, even they don't have any life either. They're just sitting in the shade, waiting for the heat to abate. But then all night long, you can hear people doing parikrama. At night they do, in this season. You can hear them all, Radhe, Radhe! Calling out all night, they'll go around. And if you get, because we have our ashram just there, next to the parikrama mark, early in the morning you get up and you see so many people. It's in the summer holidays in India. Actually what they call summer, it's only spring in America, right? So what are they going to do? They have we should go somewhere. Let's go to Govardhan, or let's go to Puri, or let's go to Mayapur. Now they're trying to make water parks and all this kind of thing, but still people prefer to go to the holy places. Even in Chennai, there are so many, they're making water parks and all that kind of thing. Our temple's in that area, so they go to the water park, then they come to our temple also. It's in good location for picking up the touristic-minded people. So, Govardhan Hill. We want to discuss Krishna's inciting Nanda Baba to stop the arrangements for the worship of Indra, or rather to deflect them to the worship of Govardhan. Then the subsequent attempted revenge by Indra, and Krishna's picking up the hill. So in this way, by performing one pastime, well, one thing Krishna did that is, in all his pastimes he gives us something to remember and be happy about, even so many years afterward. And I was saying, devotees, they'll go around Govardhan and they'll say, Shigiridhari Lal Ki Jai. So people are very happy to remember. Devotees are very happy to remember these pastimes. Mayavadis, they talk about the happiness of Brahman. What is there to be happy about? Nothing. I'm so happy. What are you happy about? Nothing. Light. I'm happy because there's a light. We're in the light. That's one kind of happiness. My friends are harassing me. My family is harassing me. My body is harassing me with so much pain, and now, no more harassment. Just merge in the light. But there's much more. Remembering Krishna's pastimes. And the non-devotees, or the lesser qualified theists, they will say, what is this? God? You say Krishna's God, lifting a hill? Well, what is this? He should be doing something like sitting on a... Why is he surrounded by all these people? He should be sitting on a cloud throwing thunderbolts. That sounds more like God. They don't know the sweetness of Krishna. So Krishna, by showing his pastimes, he gives subject matter for the devotees to hear about, discuss, remember, chant about Srimanti Gayanti Grananti Avikshnasa. smaranti nandanti tavehitam janaha ta eva pashyanta chirena tava kam bhava pravaho paramam padam bhujam. He gives them topics that they can hear about, remember, take to heart, discuss. In this way they become very happy. And by constant remembrance of Krishna, then we can see Krishna very soon. And then we'll no longer see birth and death. Mayavadis, they want to get free from birth and death, but they don't want to see Krishna. They have no particular desire to see Krishna. The yogis, they may attempt to see Krishna as the super soul, but they want to remember him. Dhyanavastita tadgatena manasa pashyanti yam yogina. The yogis, they want to see him in meditation. But it's difficult just to look and see. But the devotees, they can remember the pastimes of Krishna, all the variegated pastimes. So he gives opportunity, by performing pastimes, he gives subject matter for the devotees to remember for all time into the future. Just like we were discussing, Lord Rama appeared 177 lakh years ago. And still, to us that sounds like a long time. But still, people are going on, remembering, worshipping the pastimes of Lord Rama. So, by this pastime, Krishna performed so many activities. One of the things, I don't have a note here, it just came to my mind, is that by word jugglery, it's possible to convince people. Because Krishna spoke atheistic philosophy to Nanda Maharaj. Everything in the Bhagavatam, generally we take it as it is, but we find Krishna spoke the Kama Mimamsa philosophy to Nanda Maharaj. What's the use of worship? What's the word? By our activity, we get good and bad results. We don't depend upon Indra. So Krishna showed by this that how various philosophies people speak, they sound very convincing. There's so many different philosophies, so many different ideas. At least there used to be many different philosophies. Nowadays, not really philosophy. People have lost the capacity to even think about philosophy. This Sri Rangam was in all of India, was a land of great philosophical dispute. We find Chaitanya Mahaprabhu travel throughout India, and he would bring people to Krishna consciousness, not just by chanting and dancing, but he would discuss with scholars wherever he went. So Sri Rangam was a great place of scholarly discussion. Kanchi Moso. This was more a place of the Vaishnavas, but in Kanchi, Vaishnavas, Shaivas, Buddhists, impersonalists, still there. The Buddhists aren't there anymore. But still there, Vaishnavas and Shaivas, but they're not discussing, they're not arguing anymore, which is, they lost interest. Nowadays, to be devotee of Krishna or devotee of Shiva, it's just by family tradition. There's not that much difference. Even here in Sri Rangam, the first day I arrived, that was Tuesday evening and Wednesday morning, twice, we went to the main temple. What's that called? Periyar Koil, something. But not going through the Rajagopuram, the one on the, that must be what, on the east side? So just opposite that, there's a house, and there's a sign outside saying, Sai Coaching Classes. S-A-I. In other words, Sai Baba. I mean, the local Vaishnavas, they should go and stop this. Why are you bringing this Sai Baba here? They don't, where's the feeling? They used to fight over philosophy. Where's the feeling? They should stop that. Why are you advertising Sai Baba? Why are you putting that just right next to the temple? This Shankaracharya of Dwaraka, he's really against this. He's against this Sai Baba worship. He says that, he just gave a statement that why Maharashtra is suffering so much drought? Because they're worshipping Sai Baba. Good for him. Good for the Shankaracharya to say that. He's coming out. At last, someone is coming out and talking, this is all nonsense. Of course, his philosophy is all nonsense also. But in this respect, he's right. They shouldn't do this. So Krishna, he minimized the importance of the demigods by saying you worship Govardhan. So even demigod worship, that there's a place in Vedic culture for that. It's not the worship of demigods for material gains is not very high level, but it is acceptable within Vedic culture. Kam shanta karmanam siddhim yajante devata kshipram hi manushe loke siddhi bhavati karmaja. Krishna, he recognizes that. In Bhagavad Gita, he states that people who want perfection in the path of fruitive work, karma, they get karma siddhi by worshipping the demigods. So you can get it quickly by doing so. You do your work and you worship demigods and you get the result, which is going to the heavenly planets and so on and so forth. But worshipping these imaginary gods, that's outside Vedic culture. It's a travesty of Vedic culture. I don't know if you know what the word travesty means. It means it looks like the real thing, but it's a very bad imitation. It's farcical. So Krishna showed that the demigods, they may think they're very important, but they're not as important as they think themselves to be, or as important as people in this world think them to be. Ultimately, everyone should worship Krishna, especially his devotees. The residents of Vrindavan, they're all devotees of Krishna. Eternal servants of Krishna. So the demigods worship, the devotees should not divert their minds to demigod worship. They should worship Krishna and his devotees and his land. Aradhya Bhagavan Vrajeshataniyas Taddhama Vrindavanam. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy begins with recognizing that Krishna, well, Bhagavan is to be worshipped. The Supreme Lord is to be worshipped. That Supreme Lord is Krishna, particularly Krishna, remembering him in Vrindavan. And Srila Prabhupada translates this line, Taddhama Vrindavanam, that just as Krishna is worshipable, his land of Vrindavan is worshipable. So Krishna established this. You can just speak it. Make a book. Worship Krishna. Worship Vrindavan. But Krishna personally demonstrated that also. He speaks it and he demonstrates it. So Krishna, protects his devotees. He protected them from the terrible rains, from the wrath of Indra. Wrath, you say in American English, in British English is wrath. It means terrible anger. Indra was so angry. He called the clouds for only used at this destruction of the universe against what to him seems like some village people. He just completely went crazy with anger. Can you imagine? Can you imagine there are a few village people in Tamil Nadu, I'm just giving a theoretical scenario. For some reason, the chief minister just goes completely angry and wants to smash them all and sends in all the state machinery and the police and to smash. What will they do? They're defenseless. So what to speak of Indra? Krishna protected his devotees. And he also protected them from the great distress they felt in their heart. Now, what distress there could there be for the devotees in Vrindavan when they're living there with Krishna? We're all chanting Hare Krishna and doing all this Krishna conscious activities. The aim is to go back home, back to Godhead, to live eternally with Krishna in Vrindavan, in the land of bliss, where kathaganam natyam gamanam, every step is a dance, and every word is a song. It's a land of complete happiness. So where is the possibility of unhappiness for the devotees who are living with Krishna in Vrindavan, but they feel much unhappiness when Krishna, his mother and father and all the elderly gopas and gopis, they're very happy when Krishna is at home, but he goes out in the daytime to look after the cow. So the cowherd boys become very happy when they're with Krishna in the fields, in the forest, in the day. But at night, they don't see Krishna. So none of the devotees are with Krishna all the time, with the exception of Balaram. He's with Krishna pretty much all the time. So the moment they don't see Krishna, even though they're with Krishna in Vrindavan, they feel deep separation. Even the gopis, they chastised Brahma. Said, you're a useless creator. You don't know what you're doing. You made these eyes that blink. And when we blink, we don't see Krishna. We don't even notice when we blink. We do it all the time, on and off. But they notice, because in that just nimish blink, that short time, they wouldn't see Krishna. So for them, when Krishna goes out in the forest pasturing the cows, and all day they have to be without him. Although there's some tricks also for meeting Krishna in the forest, or meeting him at the Surya Kunda at midday. Anyway, a lot of the time they don't see Krishna, but even in the short time they feel it to be very painful. But when they were with Krishna, it was an excuse to bring them all together, and they can all be with Krishna all the time, day and night. So Krishna protected them from the pain of separation from him, so they could. And the gopis, they had an excuse to be with Krishna and look at Krishna. I mean, what else? He's holding up, whoop, this hill, this finger, right? Not the right finger. In our temple in, Omviksgård in Sweden, They have one of these Nathdwa paintings of Krishna holding up with his right hand. Maybe some yoga he does it, but generally it's left hand, that little finger of the left hand he's holding up. So they all have an excuse because, oh, they can look at Krishna because he's saving us and we have to praise him and this and that. So in this way, Krishna, he gave the opportunity for the devotees to be with him day and night for 7 days. He broke the pride of Indra, showed his superiority over Indra, and by showing his superiority over Indra, that automatically that means that he's superior to all the other demigods, because Indra is the superior to all the other demigods. So if you're superior to Indra, then automatically you're superior to all the others. So Krishna demonstrated that. That's described in Nectar Devotion, I think it is. First of all, Krishna thought, when Indra started saying these kinds of things, now I'll kill Indra. Then he thought, why should I bother? He's so insignificant. The Vrajavasis, they wanted to worship Indra. He's such a great, powerful figure. And Krishna became angry. He's harassing my devotees. I kill him. Why bother? You know, it's just Indra, that's all. Even Indra, you came and prayed to Krishna afterward. Brahma similarly prayed to Krishna after he had made his blunders. And Krishna was just thinking, they're going on giving their prayers, and Krishna's, okay, he's Brahma, I should respect him, but I wish he'd finish his prayers quickly, because I want to get back with my cowherd boys and play with them. He doesn't think that the being with Brahma is very important. He wants to be with his cowherd boys. So he shows that even though the demigods are great devotees, and he comes, Indrari Vyakalamlo, come, Mridhuyanti Yuge Yuge. He comes specifically for the purpose of relieving Indra and the other demigods from their enemies, but they're devotees, but his real heart-to-heart friends are not the great personalities of this universe, but those who simply cherish Krishna with pure love. So this is demonstrated in his Vrindavan pastimes, and especially in those in relation to Indra and Brahma, that Krishna, he's not impressed by our power, our majesty, if we have any, our wealth. He's not interested. It doesn't matter to him. Dhane jane panditye krishnere nahi pai. Keval bhakti bhosh chaitanya gosai. Krishna, we cannot attain Krishna by wealth, by having many followers, by being greatly scholarly. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu demonstrated that Krishna, he comes under the control of the devotees who have pure love for him. So in this way, in the Govardhan Leela, he demonstrated not only his own superiority to Indra, but the superiority of the Vrajavasis. That Krishna, he deals with Indra in a somewhat formal way as Krishna. When he comes as Vamana, he comes as the younger brother. But even then, he doesn't stay with Indra. He goes to Bali Maharaj. He's the younger brother of Indra, but then anyway, Bali Maharaj, I'll go and live with him. Who's the enemy of Indra? So he shows the superiority of the Vrajavasis. Superior in what way? Not that they're great demigods, but that Krishna likes to live with them. Why? Because of their pure love for him. He likes to be with the cows. And the cow herders. This is Krishna. Indra is just like a great god. Krishna is more powerful, more opulent. But Krishna, even though he's much more powerful and more opulent, he's interested in the loving exchanges of his devotees. And there's so many instances of this. Duryodhana wanted to offer Krishna a princely meal. Krishna refused it because he's not a devotee of it, particularly because he's against the Pandavas, who are the great devotees of Krishna. So Krishna wouldn't accept his food. But he went to the house of Vidura and got some banana skins to eat, because that was offered with love to him. Krishna defeated Indra, not by fighting with him. That came later. But he defeated his false pride by just showing that he didn't fight with him. He just showed, well, whatever you send, we can just easily counteract it. That's all. Neglect is sometimes the greatest defeat. If someone shows all their might, now I'm going to smash you, and you look at them, just unconcerned. It's the greatest humiliation. Of course, you have to be in a position to do that. I mean, if you have to be actually more powerful than them, because if you just yawn in the face of someone who's ready to smash you and they're actually capable of doing so, then you're going to get smashed. But the point is that Indra couldn't do that. One other thing we should remember, that by lifting Govardhan Hill, it's another proof of Krishna being Bhagavan. We often don't think that, because we just think, oh, Krishna lifts the hill, yeah, of course. You know, he kills the demons, he swallows the forest fire, he chastises Kali, lifts Govardhan Hill. We tend to forget, well, all the time he's doing these wonderful activities, and just take it for granted. But actually, of course, he could show he's Bhagavan in a much more expressive way, just like he shows the universal form to Arjuna. But these are activities, lifting Govardhan Hill, killing so many demons. These also, they all demonstrate his supreme power and supreme potency. But in Govardhan Lila, there's not much consideration of power or potency. It's all done so naturally, as if, well, now it's raining. Okay, lift up an umbrella. You don't think, oh, and then, lift up the umbrella. It's not like that. It's just, it's open. That nowadays it's like the traditional umbrellas, of course, they're not these opening, they're always open. If we see the often we see paintings of Vamanadeva, the young brahmachari, he has an umbrella like this, so it's not a folding umbrella, it's like that, it's open all the time. So Krishna, he picked it up, yeah, okay. It's like, yeah. If your son comes home from school and, what did you do at school today? Oh, I picked up a mountain. Oh, yeah, sure. But for Krishna, what did Krishna do today? Oh, he picked up a mountain. Another day, oh, he killed a huge python demon. Another day, oh, we were in the forest. And there was this demon, and Krishna killed. Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. That's nice. Oh, yeah. This. Demigods all came and prayed to Krishna. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Good. Good. Nice. What is unimaginable and amazing for others is just normal for Krishna, because he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But what's so sweet about his Vrindavan pastimes is that he does it in such a natural way that, yeah, it just seems like ordinary and easy. Krishna's holding up the hill, and some of the cowherd boys, they say to him that, well, Krishna, you've been holding it up a long time now, so maybe one of us should take it over instead. Because they think, well, Krishna's holding it up. Well, we can also, you see. We go in the forest with Krishna, and we play with him, and we have wrestling matches. Sometimes Krishna defeats us, sometimes we defeat him. So if Krishna can hold it up, then we can also, they think. So Krishna, he also shows, who could imagine? If you could, if anyone would like to imagine what is the nature of God, holding up a hill to protect his devotees is not something you could imagine. You could imagine him coming on the back of Garuda, killing the demons, something like that. But these who would have thought that Krishna would lift Govardhan? But he has all kinds of amazing pastimes. He also demonstrated how Govardhan is the greatest devotee. Haridasa Varya, the gopis, they praise Govardhan as the best of the servants of Hari, because he serves Rama and Krishna, Balaram and Krishna, with the soft grasses, and all the devotees also, the cows and the devotees. So, because Govardhan serves Krishna and Balaram and his cowherd boyfriends and the devotees and the cows throughout all the seasons in different ways, therefore Govardhan is the best devotee. And Krishna demonstrated that also by Govardhan in this way, protecting from the thunderbolts of Indra. And it wasn't just rain that he sent. He sent thunderbolts. His thunderbolts are famous for breaking mountains, but he couldn't break Govardhan. Yeah, and of course, in this pastime, as in all his pastimes, he gives great pleasure to his devotees. Krishna is the most happy person. What does his happiness come from? His happiness comes from making his devotees happy. That's the secret to happiness. Even on the mundane platform, it's observable that if you try to make others happy, then you feel happy. And if you just want to use others for your own happiness, then you're never happy. Giving gives more pleasure than taking. The dāti pratigrihnāti, the exchange of love, is in giving and receiving. There's more pleasure in giving. Therefore, devotees are always advised to serve, try to serve the devotees. Who relishes prasad the most? Those who like to offer, to prepare it and serve it and see everyone is happy by taking it, they get more pleasure, and they get to take prasadam also. At the end, when everyone has taken them, oh, now everyone is happy, then I can also be happy. So more than the flavor of the food, just the exchange, how they want to make the devotees happy by offering, giving them prasadam. So giving gives more pleasure than taking. So Krishna is the most happy because he's always trying to make his devotees happy. And his devotees are happy in exchange with him. Therefore he comes to this world and performs various pastimes. Now, Govardhan Leela is very famous. Damodar Leela is very famous. Kurukshetra fighting Leela is very famous. We find also, toward the end of the 10th canto, Narada is visiting the various palaces of Krishna. And there, Narada sees in 16,108 palaces, Krishna engaged in various activities. In some places, he's playing some sports with his friends. In some place, he's practicing archery or sword fighting. In some place, he's joking with his wife. In some place, he's arranging for the education of his children. In some place, he's arranging the marriage of his children. So in this way, it's seen that in his Dwaraka Leela, although there are many noteworthy events which are described there, such as the attack of Shalva on Dwaraka, the messenger coming from the imprisoned kings, imprisoned by Jarasandha. So these are major events. But Krishna's day-to-day life in Dwaraka appears in many ways to be like that of some ordinary householder, nothing much to talk about. But in those activities, because it's Krishna with his devotees, so those activities, they're very, very pleasing. So we don't hear about that so much, how Krishna, he'll get up in the morning, maybe he'll have some little joking words with his wife, and he'll pat his children on the head. So these are Krishna's daily activities. But because it's with Krishna, and because his devotees have unlimited love for Krishna, what would seem like ordinary exchanges in this material world, the father may also pat his child on the head. The child feels some happiness for the affection. But that is multiplied unlimited times in the pastimes of Krishna. So it's not that all of Krishna's pastimes are, from our perspective, remarkable. Many of them may seem to be commonplace. But they're all ananda chinmaya rasa. And they're all, it's all based on why Krishna, they all the queens wanted to marry him. Not so much for his strength or his power or his beauty. These are all reasons also. But Krishna's such a nice person. He's so attractive to be with, that people want to be with him and live with him and serve him eternally. What some ordinary activity, cooking a meal. But when it's cooked for Krishna, because Krishna is so kind and loving, the devotees, they find the reciprocation, their heart fills with happiness to cook for Krishna. If Krishna is pleased, the simple thing, patrang, pushpang, palang, toyang, leaf, flower, fruit, water. Krishna is pleased with that. The devotees feel immense happiness in their hearts. So Krishna demonstrates this principle at every moment of all his pastimes. And what to speak of his Govardhan Leela, when he's reciprocating with all the devotees. That's another thing. They're all the inhabitants of Vrindavan there. so many gopis, so many coward men, all the cows. And Krishna is able to reciprocate with all of them. All of them felt as Krishna is holding up Govardhan, Krishna is facing directly to me and looking at me. And that's another, what we would call miraculous. That Krishna, he individually reciprocated with every one of the Vrajvasis, including the cows and even the young children. Krishna, he wants to reciprocate with the love of everyone, and he's able to do so. He showed that in the Govardhan Leela. He also showed that even if one is a devotee, but if one becomes puffed up and thinks that he's in a position to punish devotees, then Krishna may not be very pleased with that. He'll protect those who are his real devotees. So these are different things which are demonstrated in his Govardhan Leela. His whole Vrindavan Leela shows ideal life for human society based on love of Krishna, protecting the cows, following Varnashram, opulent in the natural way without factories and industrial enterprises, simple living centered on cow protection with spiritual culture. So these are some of the points that Krishna demonstrated in his Govardhan pastime, lifting of Govardhan Hill. Then we could discuss so many pastimes, but I'll go to another one, jumping in chronologically, well ahead. Krishna, outside Vrindavan, already gone to Mathura, becomes known as the Ranchor, the one who left the battle. So, in doing so, the Jarasandha was coming on one front, and the Kalayavana was coming on another front. It looked like a very fearsome situation. Krishna left there and transferred all the people in their sleep to Dwaraka. So in this way, he showed that even though he fights with many demons, but he has a sense of dignity also. This Kala was a Yavana. He was very low class. He didn't follow Vedic culture. So Krishna didn't want to fight with him. Kshatriyas, they fight with Kshatriyas. They don't fight with tribal people or something like this. It's below their dignity to do so. So Krishna left the fight. He didn't want to fight with them. That just shows his opulence of renunciation. Jarasandha said, "See, Krishna ran away from me. He's afraid. He forgot. He himself was defeated 17 times. And then you see, I'm greater than Krishna. Krishna ran away. He's afraid of me." And Krishna had some other plan also. He had some other plan to kill Jarasandha. In leaving Mathura at that time, he also went to give his mercy to his devotee Mujukunda, and by having Mujukunda awakened by this Kala Yavana, then the Kala Yavana was burned by Mujukunda, who came back out of his sleep, and then his that boon that he'd got from the demigods to burn whoever would wake him, that was used on a suitable person. His well-wisher might want to wake him. Come on, you've been sleeping enough now. But who will wake him and then get burned to pieces? burned to ashes. So Krishna arranged that someone who anyway required to be killed would be killed by the glance of Muchukunda. Then by doing so, he also showed that he is not bound by the ordinary rules. If anyone leaves a battlefield, it's for a Kshatriya, it's disgraceful. The whole city is depending on you for protection, but Krishna leaves and he's worshipped up to the present day for doing so. Whatever he does is glorious. He doesn't become diminished by doing anything. Rather, he becomes worshipped for that. So the ordinary rules don't apply to him. And also there are so many things. He wanted to facilitate his pastimes. He didn't want to get into a drawn-out battle. He wanted to get that over with quickly and then get to Dwarka, and then the next business was coming up. He was already aware of that. Now Rukmini, the time for her marriage is coming up, and she's going to want, I have to finish up this business, get over to Dwarka, and then the messenger's going to come, and then I have to go to Kundinapur to rescue Rukmini. So he was managing his time. He said, I only have so much time, so I won't hang around and fight with all these people. Okay, let's do this. So like this, Krishna was managing everything, all in one, naika karma krit. With his activities, he gets many things done all at once. Then, eventually, he killed Jarasandha, or rather he arranged for that by a Bhima. So, by having Bhima kill Jarasandha, Krishna demonstrated, as he does so many times, that he gives the credit to his devotee. Jarasandha, when he saw this, the three came disguised as brahmanas, Krishna, Bhima, Arjuna. So Jarasandha was a great follower of Vedic principles. So he saw three brahmanas had come, unknown brahmanas, that means they'd come from a long distance. They'd come to request something from him in charity because he was known to be a very charitable person. So he looked at them and he said, well, they don't look like brahmanas. They've got these big strong bodies and they speak in very deep commanding voices, more like kshatriyas. And they even have marks on their bodies that comes from carrying weapons and quiver. They look like kshatriyas. And they look familiar. I think I've seen them somewhere before. He said, but anyway, if they are kshatriyas pretending to be brahmanas, then anyway that's abominable for kshatriyas to come and beg something. So it'll be degraded. They're automatically degraded by doing so. And if they are brahmanas, I'll give them because that's my, I'm a good kshatriya, so I give to brahmanas. So in this way, he recognized that, all right, you come to beg something, what do you want? And Krishna said, well, actually we're not brahmanas. I'm Krishna, remember me? And this is Bhima, you've heard of him, and Arjuna, and we'd like to fight with you, fight to the death. And Jarasandha said, ha, Krishna, I'm not going to fight with you, you're a degraded person, you killed your own relative, you killed Kamsa. He didn't think that Kamsa himself had killed Krishna's brothers who are also his relatives. So he impugned Krishna that you're killing. But the relative that Krishna killed, he killed him because he was killing his relatives. So it's a foolish accusation. And he said also, you're a coward, you ran away from me. The fact that he himself ran away 17 times, that didn't register in his consciousness. He said, Arjuna, he's just a boy. He thinks Arjuna's younger than me. So Arjuna, the fact that Arjuna was the most skilled warrior among the Pandavas, that he didn't give credence to that. So he said, okay, Bhima, I can fight with him. He's a fit opponent for me. So in this way, Jarasandha was killed by Bhima. Krishna gave the credit to Bhima for doing so. And Krishna also showed that even if someone is a good follower of Vedic principles, very good, in many ways Jarasandha was good, he even used to worship Vishnu. Can you imagine that? Because he worshipped Shalagram. But when Vishnu came in front of him, he wanted to kill him. So he was just an official worshipper. You'll find so many brahmanas, smarter brahmanas, they worship Vishnu, but philosophically they want to kill him. Or in the Shankara system, five gods. So someone may have as their family god, Vishnu, Balaji, whatever. But their idea is you worship him and then forget him when you become liberated. So it's official worship. It's not proper worship with love. So Krishna showed such persons, they're fit to be destroyed. They're not devotees at all. Their worship is not worship. It's just a semblance. Of course, such persons, if they have some semblance of piety and they meet devotees, they could become purified and actually become devotees. But we see in the case of Jarasandha, even though he had the opportunity to personally take shelter of Krishna, but all he thought was how to kill Krishna. So Krishna made clear that this Jarasandha, he's a demon who is fits in the verse, Paritranaya sadhunam vinashayata dushkritam, who is the sadhu who worships Krishna. But no, he officially worships Vishnu, but he's in the second line, vinashayata dushkritam. He's not in the first line. It's to protect the sadhus, the devotees, Krishna comes. But Jarasandha, he's officially pious. Of course, you would say he captured so many kings. But that's there in Kshatriya Dharma. If a powerful Kshatriya can conquer over another, it's allowed. It's not. But just to conquer over them for self-aggrandizement, that is not dharma. So Krishna demonstrated that. He also demonstrated the Paritranaya Sadhunam by rescuing the 20,800 kings who were imprisoned by Jarasandha, who are all devotees of Krishna. He restored them to their position and their glory. So in this way, Krishna, vinashayata dushkritam, he eliminated Jarasandha, he delivered the devotees, Paritranaya Sadhunam, and he also paved the way for Yudhishthira to perform the Rajasuya Yajna, Dharma Sangsthapanata. Yudhishthira couldn't perform the Rajasuya Yajna as long as there was any opposing king. So Jarasandha had to be eliminated. So in this way, by eliminating Jarasandha, then Krishna also paved the way for Yudhishthira to perform the Rajasuya Yajna. So by having Jarasandha killed in this way, Krishna fulfilled various purposes by one activity. So that's another example of naika kama krit. Then another example, during the battle of Kurukshetra, the first general on the side of the Kauravas, Duryodhana, he wasn't, even though he was the king, but he appointed the general, first of all Bhishma, then Drona, then Karna was next, and then then Shauva last. So the Bhishma was the first. And the fighting was going on back and forth, back and forth. And then Duryodhana accused Bhishma one evening that, you see, everyone knows you, even though you're fighting with us, you're affectionate to the Pandavas. And therefore you're not showing your full power. Of course, Duryodhana said it in a much more piercing and nasty way, because his idea was to make Bhishma angry by insulting him and get him charged up to kill the Pandavas. So Bhishma had 5 special arrows, and each one was meant for killing the Pandavas. So then Krishna sent Arjuna. Arjuna had to take some boon from Bhishma. So that, yes, yeah, so Bhishma said, with these arrows I'll kill. These arrows, they're all meant, one for each Pandava. So tomorrow I'll use these, they'll be finished. So Krishna knew this, he's the super soul in everyone's heart. So he sent Arjuna. Arjuna had a boon to take from Bhishma. So he sent him at night. Although during the day they would fight, at night they could visit each other in each other's camps. So Arjuna went to the Kaurava camp, came before Bhishma, bowed down, offered him respects. Yes, what can I do for you? You have those 5 arrows? Yes, give them to me. Then Bhishma and Duryodhana, they both knew, oh, this is Krishna. Must be Krishna. Who could know? Who could know and who would do such a thing? That was Krishna. Now, of course, Krishna could protect the Pandavas even from those arrows. But Krishna, he generally didn't like to go against it. He wouldn't want to humiliate Bhishma in this way, that his weapons are... they're insufficient. He's incapable of killing. So in this way he shows that Krishna is everyone's heart. He knows everything. And he's orchestrating everything. Ultimately he's orchestrating everything. And that in this way he's able to perform activities which have multiple ramifications. Of course, anyone may do that, especially someone who's very powerful. Their activity may have multiple ramifications. Just like, for instance, if we see the recent history of the world, the British leaving India and dividing it into India and Pakistan, that's had multiple ramifications which are going on to the present day. The first thing was that India was split, is no longer one country. And then so many people were killed during the time when so many Muslims were moving to India, and so many Muslims and Sikhs were moving from Pakistan to India, and so many Muslims were moving from India to Pakistan. And then there was West Pakistan and East Pakistan, and practically inevitably they split up and there was never war over that. And up to the present day, there's constant tension going on, which manifests in various ways. Practically, no, not every day there's tension along the border. And then there's enmity set up between India and Pakistan, especially in Pakistan. The only reason for that country to exist is out of enmity to India. So they have to keep on cultivating it, as it's their national sense of identity. So even a powerful materialistic person, their activity may have many ramifications, but not on the level of Krishna, because he's the supreme powerful person. Krishna also, as in the pastime with Jarasandha, he demonstrated the generous nature of Kshatriyas, that they're willing to give. They're willing to give even their own life to protect others. There are many examples of that. I mentioned before Shibi Maharaj. There's so many. Death to a Kshatriya, if he can die fighting, that is his glory, fighting for the proper cause. Atova prapshasi swargam, jitva va bhokshase mahim. If the Kshatriya is very happy to go to war. Sukhina Kshatriya parata labhante yuddham idrisham. They're very happy to go to war for the right cause. Because if they win, they conquer the earth. And if they're defeated, they're killed in battle, then they go to the heavenly planets. They have that. They can give. We find so many examples in Vedic culture. Kshatriya has so much wealth accumulated. Just performs one yajna, gives it all away. Has nothing left. He's very happy. Very good. Now I gave everything. Yeah. So Krishna demonstrates that generosity with Jarasandha. He thought, whatever these Brahmins want, I'll give them. Bhishma Dev. Arjuna has come, my whole plan is spoiled, but anyway, give him. Doesn't try to argue his way out of it. No, that was Duryodhana, wasn't it? Duryodhana had the arrows. So he gave them to Bhishma. And of course, in doing so, I didn't say it, it almost goes without saying, he saved the Pandavas by doing this. So, Hare Krishna, now yeah, there are other things also. Yeah, okay. So we'll go now for Harinam Sankirtan. Hare Krishna.